But how does one bring spiritual reality into his or her life? How doable are the spiritual practices in modern life? In this final segment of our first session, David begins to give you some practical tools to use. Here, he begins his study of the practices of meditation and contemplation, themes he will revisit throughout the program.
Spiritual reality in the modern world, how doable are various spiritual practices, and how do you integrate that with modern life, with the demands of job, work, children, taxes, and what all? It's an orientation to life to begin with. It's an orientation. For the same reason, people go to church, they become oriented to integrity and sinlessness, and they endeavor to be forgiving and loving unconditionally. And then some people would become spiritually very, very attracted. So their life becomes more and more aligned with pursuing spiritual truth in all of its expressions. And they may be attracted to meditation and contemplation and further spiritual study. So then, if they're spiritually committed and curious and driven, they come upon the kind of books that I write. The kind of books I write are for people who felt sort of an inner call. And so we go into the contemplation as a way of being in the world. And of course, meditation. Now, meditation has quite an attraction to a lot of people. People confuse it with yoga and various postures and breathing techniques and all. But meditation is really looking within the mind to see what is the source and the nature of the mind. And so it's introspection. So self-knowledge is considerable. You become aware of your limitations, your ambivalences, the things you're hung up on. And then you use certain spiritual principles, such as becoming loving towards all. Well, to be loving towards all, you have to see them differently. So that takes you into looking in perception. How do I see things? And why do I see them that way? And I think in that, Socrates' dictum is extremely helpful. Christ said, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do." Well, that's hard to stick with. That's an ideal. Socrates is more helpful. Socrates said, "All men choose only the good, what appears to them to be the good. The only difficulty is they can't discern the real good from the false good." In other words, perception from essence, which is what Descartes said in a more intellectual form, interna res versus res externa. The world the way you think it is and see it is, and then the world the way it is. So the value of consciousness research was we discovered a means to discern truth from falsehood and appearance from essence. Actually, for the first time in human history, nobody had ever been able to really reliably discern one from the other, except through painful experience. You discover that this man is selling bogus stock in a bogus company, but you've already lost the fortune by that time. You know, it was funny because you remember when the certain stocks skyrocketed, WorldCom and all those. Well, all those giant corporations that were making skyrocketing stock rises, we calibrated them at 190, so we didn't lose a nickel on them. They calibrated at 190, based on fallacy. So discerning truth from falsehood, then, is a distinct advantage. Now, the person who is spiritually oriented gets attracted to these spiritual principles. How can I be forgiving? Well, being forgiving depends on how you see the person. So, much as Socrates said, and you're really asking God to reveal to you the essence, the true nature. So by revelation, you begin to discern the intrinsic innocence of people, how innocent they are. So I can watch a terrorist threatening to kill people and all, and I still see inside is the innocent little child who had this drummed into his head that killing infidels is a divine task. So when we see how people are programmed by society, by television and blog sites and all that, you lose your resentment. You sort of feel a sadness that it had to be that way. However, this world is the optimum world for the evolution of human consciousness. We've calibrated this many, many times in different forms. This world is perfect as it is. Don't ask me about improving the world, because the world is perfect as it is. Why? Because this world provides the opportunity for maximum karmic benefit, for the gaining of positive karma and for the undoing of negative karma. So in the evolution of human consciousness, then, the Buddha said, and I agree with the Buddha, to be born a human is rare indeed. Rarer still is it to realize the value of a human lifetime and to take advantage of the opportunity for positive merit. So this is the good karma to be born a human on this planet, where you have the opportunity to take advantage. So one advantage you have for positive merit is to be attracted to a spiritual endeavor. The Buddha said, rare it is to have heard of the truth, rarer still to pursue the truth. So people who are becoming spiritually attracted have to appreciate the fact that karmically and as far as destiny goes, they're extremely rare. I calculated if you ask everybody on the street what is their greatest ambition in life, less than 1 in 10 million would tell you to become enlightened. 1 in 10 million. Therefore, to even be attracted to try to achieve some degree of spiritual integrity, sainthood, or enlightenment is already an extremely rare gift. Anybody who is even attracted to listening to what we're talking about today has already been designated for enlightenment. Now, we've done this with many an audience, that the audiences that come to our lectures, when we ask, the congregation or the assembly of people are destined for enlightenment in the future, and that's why they're here, we always get yes. Because if you weren't destined for enlightenment, why would you be attracted to it? I mean, who would be at a tennis class unless they were planning to play tennis? The very fact that one is attracted. So, you see, you get over the thought that you're being propelled by the past, and you begin to understand, no, you're being attracted by the future. You have made a decision to reach a higher state of awareness, whatever that might be in this lifetime. So your destiny now is what's pulling you forward. So you're being attracted by the future rather than just propelled by the past. So every decision you make, it has a karmic consequence. The divinity of God, therefore, is not an arbitrary. It's an absolute. The judgment of God is continuous and ongoing and absolute and impersonal. There's no capricious God that decides, oh, you're bad, now you get punished. Oh, you're good, now you'll get rewarded. You yourself, of your own decision, decide exactly where you're going to be in the field of heaven and hell. And every moment, you're making choices. If you watch how the mind works, you'll see it's making choices every single second. In fact, about all it does is make choice of what to pay attention to, what to listen to, what to react to, what to think about. It's constantly making decision. You might say the human mind is a constant decisioner, the decisioner of what it wants to experience and how it wants to experience it. So as you go deeper into the level of consciousness, you begin to realize that the phenomena of the mind are happening autonomously. There is no personal you making a decision that you're going to witness or observe something. Witnessing and observing is a phenomena that happens of its own. You don't have any decision about that at all. Then you begin to realize, wow, maybe there isn't any kind of a personal I that's arbitrarily deciding things from moment to moment and making weighty decisions with great karmic consequences. Because what you begin to see with contemplation and meditation is that this is autonomous. There is no personal self making this decision. It is consciousness itself that is making this decision. And you begin to loosen your identification with the personal I. Now, this is facilitated by contemplation, by meditation. So in ordinary life, we begin to take out time to meditate and by introspection begin to witness how the mind works and who is the self, who is the me behind this mind, or am I the mind, etc. Then your spiritual erudition also leads to a contemplative lifestyle. And I say that's the most useful thing. Think about meditation as it takes you out of this world. You got to find time to meditate, a place to meditate. And it tends to get lost in the demandingness of everyday life. Contemplation is a way of holding, let's say, a spiritual lesson in mind, and then holding that in the back of your mind throughout the day, no matter what. And inviting God through prayer to reveal to you the true meaning of this phrase. So you take a spiritual understanding and you begin to contemplate it. For instance, you can take the 91st Psalm. You can just take the first few sentences on it and spend a month. I think I spent a month on each verse of the 91st Psalm. And marvelously, unbelievably, almost all the phenomena of the 91st Psalm materialized into actual experiential reality in this lifetime. Even stepping over the viper, everything began to happen, everything within the 90% sum. There's one thing that your foot will not be dashed upon a rock, and you will step over the viper. And I was at the top of a rather deserted place where there was an old building, and I'm walking up the staircase. And as I go to step over the step, the biggest rattlesnake I've ever seen out here west is coiled up and ready to strike. And we were like 1 foot away from each other. He's looking at me, and I'm looking at him. And all of a sudden, I totally surrendered to God. And in that instant, all of a sudden, there was a profound peace of infinite dimension and infinite power. The peace and love of God is also extremely powerful. You can tell somebody's experienced it, because when it's present, it is invincibly powerful on the level of the absolute. On the level of the absolute, there is profound presence and stillness. The snake was suspended by the stillness, and I was suspended. We were both suspended in the stillness, and time stopped. I don't know how much actual clock time went by, but the two of us were confined to this infinite space. And the peace was so profound that neither one of us could violate it or move. Finally, the snake and I had gotten into each other's beingness to such an extent that we had satisfied some inner biologic, very primitive thing within both of us. And then the snake came to a stop, and the snake just went off, rattling his little rattle, saying goodbye. And I was released from the immobilization of the moment. Now, that's in the 91st Psalm, and here it says, you shall step over the viper. And every single thing in the 91st Psalm came to pass. Every single thing came to pass. The primary problem is the presumption that there is a personal self that is the decider behind decisions, the doer of actions. And the fastest way to enlightened state is to begin to question that. If you examine to see who is the doer, who is the performer, who is the experiencer, you will find there isn't any. And so to make rapid spiritual progress, all you have to do is transcend the Newtonian presumption of causality and begin to see. And once you hear this and look for it, you'll begin to see it, and you'll go through transformation. The hardest part is the first step. Anybody who's even listening to this has already crossed over the threshold that separates the sheep from the goats and the men from the boys. They've already crossed over. To even be seriously, integrously interested is already an extremely major advance. And I can reaffirm it in my own spiritual experience as a teacher, that to even be interested in the subject is already a tremendous advance, a tremendous advance. To even give it the plausibility, it's worth the time and the energy, because people are selfish with how they want to spend their time and energy. So now if you want to spend your time and energy at least investigating spiritual reality, that is already tremendous. So merely investigating it. So the first step is usually people get an inkling, an intuitive attraction. Maybe a friend takes them to a 12-step meeting, or somebody goes to the church and they're just charmed by the congregation. By whatever means, a person becomes interested. And that's all you need, is that first interest and then the decision to go further with it and investigate where it leads. Now, I can say the realization of absolute truth does not depend on the words of people who've lived 1,000 years ago. You can take the words of a human being who's gone through a great deal of it. And when that person says to you, it is worth it, it is worth it, you will always be rewarded 10 times over the effort that you put into it. You can take a presumption of honesty, integrity, and authority of a spiritual teacher who himself has lived it. Now, once you're a spiritual teacher, you realize what karmic merit and responsibility is. So a true spiritual teacher is extremely integrous about being integrous. Why? Because you know the karmic price of falsehood. So you have to find a teacher that you can calibrate, that calibrates high enough that you can trust. All right, if somebody calibrates extremely high, you begin reading whatever they've taught with the presumption that this is likely to be the absolute truth, but it remains for your inner self to confirm that. However, it's a pretty good start. I never try to convince anybody to follow a spiritual pathway or to read these books or to listen to these lectures, because if you're not ripe, you're wasting your time. No, the spirit evolves with maturity, and it reaches a point where it now becomes interested in absolute truth for its own sake. So anybody who's interested in even what we're talking about today is already gifted and karmically very advanced person, you know, to even be interested in such phenomena. So you'll see, spiritual teacher is not interested in convincing anybody to become a spiritual student. I'm not interested in enthusing anybody and leading a cheering squad. Let's all go and look for God, you know, because either you're called to it or you're not. And if you're called to it, you can't deny it. And if you aren't called to it, you try to be interested, but you're not really. Anybody who listens to this is already gifted, I will tell you that.